Welcome back to The Good Fight on EWTN Radio. Here again is Barbara McGuigan.
Welcome back to round two of The Good Fight. The fight is on, and we'll continue our interview with a great man I just met not too long ago, Sean McAfee. He's written an incredible book, and we're talking about it. It's called Reform Yourself, How to Pray, Find Peace, and Grow in Faith with the Saints of the Counter-Reformation. And herein lies the difference in his book from any other that I honestly can say, Sean, that I've ever read before, as because not only does he talk about 10, just 10 of the saints. And Sean, you said there are more, but these are the ones that, these are the saints that stand out the most, yes?
Yeah, these are really the powerhouses, like you said. These are probably the, I think one or two of the ones that I included, somebody might not traditionally include within the counter-reformers, maybe like Saint Gonzaga. These are the ones that I think really reformed the church, maybe not just, you know, tangibly and doctrinally and that sort of thing, but really gave the zeal and the spirituality back to the church.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about St. Francis de Sales, and it seems like whenever you talk about him, if you've read about him and studied him and read his quotes and things, I love him, then you will see the connection between he and St. Jane Frances de Chantal, whom I love as well. And so, and she quotes him all the time. When you start to see both of them, you can make the connection when you read their own bios. But, and then you have Saint Ignatius of Loyola in there, Saint Teresa of Avila, another one of my favorite, Saint Robert Bellarmine. And I, you know, we'll get to him. We'll get to him in this next hour here. You call him our model apologist, St. Robert Bellarmine. I had no idea of all the things that you taught in there, Sean. And then, of course, St. Aloysius Gonzaga and Pope St. Pius V, St. Philip Neri. I love him, too. I was in London speaking there at his oratory, and there are pictures of him all over the place. So that's when I started to learn about St. Philip Neri. And, of course, St. John of the Cross. Who does not love him?
You want to hear a funny story?
Yeah, sure. Go.
So I was in Rome, I think, like 2 months ago?
I was in
Rome with some friends, and we walked outside the Vatican. We took a right, before the, Hadrian's little castle there, St. Michele's. And we went down the street. We were actually going to look for a burger place. And we got our burger, and we were on the way back, and we were like, hey, you remember that big church that we saw on the way there? Well, let's stop in there and say, a decade of the rosary. And it was like a group of five of us, some other people in the pro-life movement, and me and my wife and kids as well. And it was raining really hard, so we kind of needed somewhere to dry off to as well. And we walk into this church, and this lady, she comes up, and the sign right behind her has a couple flags on it. And I can tell she's like a multilingual, maybe she's asking, she's going to offer us a tour or something. She said, this is the church of St. Philip Neri. This is the one he founded. And she goes on, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's buried here, right? And she said, yes. And I said, and his successor, Baronius, is buried here, right? Yes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, and this is the roof that almost caved in and killed somebody, but he witnessed a vision of an angel saving it, right? And she was like, yes. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe I'm here. I didn't even know the church I walked into was that Oratory Foundation Church. It was phenomenal. Yes. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It was a great experience. I love St. Philip Neri.
I do, too. Now, he is the one, too, that he had problems. Isn't he, unless I'm getting my saints mixed up, but I think I'm right, he had his chin buried in his chest when he was alive. I mean, he had some sort of neck problem. Wasn't that he?
Oh, I don't think that's him. His big, bodily feature that's always featured in all his biographies was his heart actually, like, it kind of had a micro explosion whenever he was, like, in his 30s. He was actually praying for years and years for God to give him spiritual gifts. And he kind of has, I don't know the medical term for it, but his heart kind of explodes a little bit. And it actually broke two of his ribs. The doctors didn't know this until they examined his body after his death. And for the rest of his life, he dealt with this pain. And he always said that that was because his heart was burning for God so badly that it eventually exploded. And he's a saint of humor. So whenever he says that, he says it, you know, somewhat funnily. But that was kind of his thing, was a heart that kind of like the Grinch, you know, not two sizes too small, but perhaps two sizes too big.
Oh my gosh, that's a beautiful little story. I'll tell you, the saints bless you so much, don't they? I mean, I just can't imagine sometimes when I read, especially when I was reading your book and I love to learn new things anyway, but new facts. And I thought I knew a lot about St. Jane Frances de Chantal, but you opened my eyes to more facts about her. And that's what I'd like to talk about now, if that's okay with you, because you called her the simple reformer. The simple reformer touches me. She touches me to the core. And so on 173, you give a sketch of St. Jane from the beginning of her unpredictable life. Can you talk about her life? Because it'll blow you away, really.
Yeah. In fact, maybe I'll just continue. I haven't memorized my own book, but I'll just read the first paragraph. It says, a middle-aged woman with a great marriage, four wonderful children, charged with the custody of an entire estate and its staff, is not the sort we would expect to join a convent, nor is the sort we'd expect to exchange scores of letters with bishops, cardinals, or become a close confidant to a great saint. In Jane Frances de Chantal, at 20 years old, we see a woman who deeply loved God, her children, and her husband, and we wouldn't expect her to do a lot more than live out that simple life of holiness. But life can be unpredictable, and one day, her husband came home from a hunting incident with a gunshot wound. He died within hours, and her life was turned upside down. Overnight, she became a single mother and without any support for the entire estate. Her simple life was not so simple anymore. So I think that kind of that's a great introduction to a woman who we call her the simple saint, but man, I tell you, she did not have a simple life. You know, it might have been that way for the first 20 years, but for the next decade after this, you know, it was a daily struggle for her to figure out, you know, who am I now? What am I supposed to do? Where am I headed? And what does God want me to do with my life?
Yes, and don't you think that this is when, I don't have the dates or anything, but don't you think that this is when God brought to her St. Frances de Sales at this time after her husband died?
It was actually somewhere like 8 years later. She really struggled.
Really?
It was like nearly a decade. I don't want to exaggerate, as my wife would say, over exaggerate. I don't want to do that. It was somewhere like between six and 10 years later. She really, for a number of years, you know, maybe John of the Cross would have said she had a dark night. She struggled in prayer. She, you know, had to go from, you know, a stay-at-home, what we would define as a stay-at-home mother, to managing an entire estate with no help other than her father-in-law, who she deeply depended on and loved. And once she was back on her feet, and she kept her religious devotions through this whole thing, once she was back on her feet, this took a number of years, she then attended a sermon of St. Francis, if I remember correctly. And she knew in that moment that he was to be her spiritual director. I think she didn't say anything for the first one time that she heard him preach. And she waited until the next time because she was the kind that, you know, she didn't say, hey, God, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, can you make it rain tomorrow? She didn't test God, but she really wanted to be absolutely certain of what God's will was. So she would be very patient about letting God's will work in her life and for him to emanate his intentions for her over time. And so I think she waited until the next time she met him, and she just briefly introduced herself, and they began a relationship that spanned decades, and they became very close.
Yes.
Like you said before, anytime you read the life of St. Frances de Sales, half of that biography is probably going to be about his relationship with Jane Frances de Chantal, because not only together did they give us some of the best spiritual direction in church history, really, they also reformed the church, founded the Visitation Order together, and gave us so much more than that.
So much more. And you also included in this book reform yourself, that St. Vincent de Paul said that she was a woman of great faith, but listen to this, and had temptations against the faith all her life, even though she appeared to have reached the peace and tranquility of spirit of virtuous souls. She suffered terrible interior trials, which she communicated to me on several occasions. So she also knew St. Vincent de Paul. I mean, how can she was surrounded by men saints, for Pete's sake? I just can't get over this. She seemed so harassed, yeah, he said, by abominable temptations that she had to take her eyes away from herself so as not to contemplate her unbearable state. To look at her soul horrified her as if it was an image of hell. But through these great sufferings, she never lost her serenity, yielding with joy to what God wanted from her. And that is why, this is St. Vincent de Paul talking, that is why I consider her as one of the most holy souls I have met on earth. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Coming from St. Vincent de Paul. And, he wasn't the only saint that, she wasn't the only saint that he had come across, right?
Sure.
You know, throughout his life, I don't know, money trailed in that direction. But these guys all knew each other. Like I was saying, whenever I read the life of St. Robert Bellarmine, all of these saints depended on each other. They worked together. They worked on reform. They worked on each other's souls. And, it was really, a courageous family of saints that existed at this time. This is such a special thing. One thing that comes to mind as I kind of reflect on these relationships is the relationship, if you will, the modern day relationship between John Paul II and Teresa of Calcutta. They exchanged a lot of letters as well. They prayed together. They went on diplomatic envoys together. And that's the way that these counter-reformers operated, but multiply that times 10 or 20, It wasn't just one of them working with one of them, but they were working, the synergy that was going on in the church at the time between these saints is absolutely, you don't know these relationships exist until you read about their biographies, but, I said in one interview once, and I'll say it again here, I think this is the best way to say it. It's kind of funny too, is there were no Chuck Norrises in the church for the Counter-Reformation. There were no lone wolves, just getting it all done. Right. It was one team and one family.
It was a community effort almost, Tom, wasn't it? Oh my goodness. Just to think though, to meet someone like her. When I think about it, Sean, when we all have to choose heaven, God doesn't send anyone to hell. We have to choose heaven. We will decide where we go, right? By our choices in life and doing God's will, that's all she cared about, was doing God's will. The safest place to be is in the will of God, is what I always say. But to think that we will be able to have conversations with them when we get to heaven. Doesn't that just, isn't that too much to think almost?
Yeah. I don't know who, there's probably a line for some of these saints.
don't you think they can be pulling for us? And Our Lady, oh my goodness. It's just going to be, eye is not seen, ear is not heard, what it's going to be like. But, we're coming up soon, and I'll take a good break. And I just wonder, Sean, if you want to go to your favorite St. Robert Bellarmine. After we come back from the break, what do you think?
How do you know he's my favorite? Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I asked you. Remember I said, who is the saint that you feel the most affinity to? A saint that you pray through that whole thing. And you mentioned him. You also mentioned another, but I can't remember who the second one was. But he was another one that I did not have. I've heard of St. Bellarmine. I spoke at the parish, St. Robert Bellarmine. But when I learned about him, once again, just to say this, I was lifted up. I read a lot of books, Sean. This is what my show is all about, and I've been doing this for years. But I was lifted up by this book. And I'm just, like I say, I'm grateful you put pen to paper. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Good Fight on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use Catholic radio to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Looking for a solid and dependable Catholic radio station in your area? One that's uplifting and authoritative? A trustworthy tool for the new evangelization? God may be calling you to a mission in Catholic radio. Find out how you can start a Catholic radio station where you live, powered by the truth of the church and EWTN's dynamic radio programming.
Contact me, Jack Williams, at 205-795-5756 or jwilliams@ewtn.com.
On fire for EWTN? Get Amazon Fire TV. All you need is a high-speed internet connection, a TV, and the Amazon Fire TV player. Never miss any of your favorite EWTN television or radio programs again.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The 10th commandment, you shall not desire anything that is your neighbor's. This commandment is similar to the 9th because it uses the word covet, which means to inordinately or inappropriately desire something. And therefore, related to this are concepts that are familiar to us, such as greed or avarice, which is the undue passion for riches and powers. And likewise, envy and jealousy are related here. Jealousy, you have something that I want, but I want it inappropriately or inordinately. Likewise, though, envy is a very dark thing because it wants to destroy that which is good in another because it makes me look bad by comparison. And so, in all these ways, the Lord is asking us to look very carefully to our desires because they can grow too expansive and lead us into very grave sins. The 10th commandment, you shall not desire anything that is your neighbor's.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
This is The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan. On EWTN Radio, if you'd like to join the discussion, call 1-800-585-9396. That's 1-800-585-9396. Here again is Barbara McGuigan.
Welcome back to The Good Fight, and I would like to give you that number once again, 1-800-585-9396. Just in case you have a question for Sean McAfee, the author of the book Reform Yourself, it's all about 10 of the saints of the Counter-Reformation. And what's so beautiful about it is not only does he give you, a thumbnail sketch of the saint, maybe a little more than that even, but he also applies their teachings to us so that we can improve in our own skills, our evangelization skills, in our relationship skills. I mean, there's just so many things in this book. We were just talking about St. Jane Frances de Chantal, and I remember that Sean was telling us about St. Robert Bellarmine, is telling me that he was the model apologist. So you always start your chapters with dates, the feast day, and then a quote. And he said, Sean, freedom of belief is pernicious. It is nothing but the freedom to be wrong. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Mic drop. Not that he had a microphone back then, but maybe, I could just imagine him just getting on stage, to a quote like that. That one just blew me away. There's several of those types in the book, but yeah, it's nothing but the freedom to be wrong. You know, I was talking before about the individualism that was existing and emerging at the time. It's really what has shaped Western history as we know it today. You know, where we're choosing careers and everybody has a different, opinion about everything.
Sure.
100 years prior to this, that was hardly even a concept. And by the by the time he was a cardinal, it was rampant throughout Europe. Everybody had their own idea. Truth was relative, especially spiritual truth. And being certainly the most successful and influential theologian, but also apologist of his time, it would seem fitting that he would say something like this. I'll just read it one more time for listeners. He said,
sure.
Freedom of belief is pernicious. It is nothing but the freedom to be wrong.
And the whole idea is, we are to choose what is good, right? But God gives us the free will to choose either, right? What is good or what is evil. But what our choice should always be is what is good, yes?
Right. And I think this goes, this really tells us a lot about St. Robert Bellarmine. First of all, he was a Jesuit, and the Jesuits were founded on several principles, and one of them is kind of a dual principle. It was obedience to the church, but they have an extra vow, and that's to the Pope. And the reason they do that is because they want to, well, it makes the Jesuits extremely unique, and it makes them, frankly, very effective, but it tells us a lot about St. Robert Bellarmine as a Jesuit, because he wasn't thinking, okay, I'm gonna come up with my own style, I'm gonna come up with my own ideas. His primary goal throughout his whole life was just to be a simple pastor and just do what the church needed him to do, and to do it to the very best of his abilities. So he applied that sort of zeal to his study, to his administration, to his flock. You know, whenever he actually became a cardinal before he ever became a bishop. That's a rarity. But he became a cardinal before he ever became a bishop. And whenever he was, even though he had a multitude of responsibilities, I couldn't even imagine it. This was in Genoa. He was a bishop of Genoa. It's said that he visited every house in his parish twice while he was bishop. Guess how long he was a bishop there?
I don't know.
Less than 2 years. Less than 2 years. Visited every single household twice. It's just phenomenal. He really did his best to really, you know, not just manage, but just love his flock and do everything to the best of his abilities. So that's where I say, you know, he said it's nothing but the freedom to do wrong. To him, what would be the antithesis of this, what would be the truthful way to do it, is to obey what the church says, because the church is Christ. You know, Christ will never lead us astray.
Amen. And I loved how you wrote in here, you said history records that he became, St. Robert Bellarmine, became one of the greatest members of the Jesuit order, a scholar and apologist of godly character, and just the sort of reformer the church needed then and needs again today. End of your quote. And I wanted to ask you, who do you think is our Bellarmine for today, Sean?
Oh, if I was to say anybody, Bellarmine is very unique. I can't say, I know who I'm going to answer with, but I want to say that Bellarmine, you know, he had a lot of responsibilities, and the church at the time was also very politically centered throughout the world. So whenever, let's say, the Republic of Venice, which didn't belong to Italy or the Papal States at the time, it was a sovereignty, you know, when someone like the Republic of Venice or the Church of England, you know, I guess was diplomatically involved with the church.
Yeah.
They sent Robert Bellarmine. He was an apologist, and yet he was a theologian, but he was also a great diplomat. So the person I'm going to name right now is directly based on his, I guess, involvement in the Counter-Reformation as an apologist. The best representation, our current St. Robert Bellarmine, I would say, is Patrick Madrid. Patrick Madrid has been an inspiration for me in the world of apologetics and in the world of just being a Catholic.
Wow.
You know, since I got a hold of his books, he to me, and we've corresponded on the side. So it's not just listening to his show, or reading his books, but, you know, I've taken his courses with Holy Apostles as well, but kind of knowing him on a personal level and having met him and, you know, had dinner with him and sipped wine with him, I would say that he is the kind of model that every apologist these days, and there's a lot of them, I don't want to, you know, belittle anybody else who's doing fantastic work out there, but to me, he's the model apologist like St. Robert Bellarmine, because he represents not just a wealth of knowledge and a fantastic ability to explain theological and apologetic concepts, but he does it with such grace and humility. You know, he really listens when people call into his show. And anybody that, you know, I think some of his earliest tapes that really, and he still sells these at his talks, are that really kind of show us who Patrick Madrid is, are these ones of these, he went on to these evangelical radio shows where he would be the guest. And these people would just yell at him and say the worst things to him. But he listened. He let them talk, and he responded politely. thoroughly and effectively. And so in him, I do see a lot of St. Robert Bellarmine.
He's very calm, too. He's very, you know, I read one time that the greatest saints were, you know, they didn't get ruffled. They didn't get overexcited. They were just very stable, just mellow, calm. And I always appreciated that in him. Well, you know who I was thinking of, Sean? I wasn't thinking of laity. I was thinking of clergy. Robert Cardinal Seurat. Have you read his books? Have you read his books?
I have I read, I can't remember the name.
God or Nothing?
Came out 2 years ago.
God or Nothing.
No, it wasn't that.
Silence? Silence just came out.
It was an Ignatius Press. They, I can't remember the title. But no, I would agree with you. Talk about somebody who is highly influential on modern Catholics, highly influential within his own people, you know, within the clergy, and somebody who speaks the truth succinctly, cogently, and courageously. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Cardinal.
Three C's.
Great.
Yeah, I am so impressed. Oh, how I would love to have this person on The Good Fight, Robert Cardinal Seurat. I think he is just really amazing. I read God or Nothing and A Sum of Silence, and oh my goodness.
It was Silence. Yep, that was it.
Yeah. It's I don't have it in front of me, but I do have God or Nothing by my side because it's just such an incredible book as well. So that's who I was thinking of. But back to St. Robert Bellarmine. I do hear music all of a sudden, too, so we'll come right back to St. Robert Bellarmine. You're listening to The Good Fight on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Barbara McGuigan here with Sean McAfee. We'll be right back.
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn.
I met the Pope when he came to Washington, D.C., and from that moment on, I knew that I had to combine my faith with journalism, my job. I love coming to work because I know that I can talk about God on television and my pro-life views. And now, not only do I share it internally, but I share it with a global audience. How great is that?
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn, weekdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Marriage is for better or for worse. The young and foolish never think for worse will ever come. We enter marriage thinking our spouses are going to be the balm for all our wounds. Sometimes they are. Other times, a spouse is like the diagnosing hand pushing on your arm to see exactly where it's broken. Ouch! But the goal is your healing. Divorce statistics are often misunderstood. About 50% of people who enter marriage, they don't end up divorced. 50% of marriages end up in divorce because so many people get married and divorced multiple times. God keeps trying to heal them again and again through the person they fall in love with, but when the pain comes, they take off again. When you're facing hard times and romantic phrases feel forced, try these words, "I will never leave you." That's a more profound expression of love than you could have ever uttered when you were young and infatuated. And your faithfulness is also how God will heal you. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I just want to share that 5 years ago, my lovely warrior princess and saint of a wife and I decided to adopt a little girl through foster care. She is the perfect roundout of our family of three boys and her. Yes, there are challenges. Very grateful today for all the blessings that he has shown our family.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
This is The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan on EWTN Radio. If you'd like to join the discussion, call 1-800-585-9396. That's 1-800-585-9396. Here again is Barbara McGuigan.
Welcome back to The Good Fight. I'm here with Sean McAfee, and he has an excellent book that is published by Catholic Answers at Catholic.com. Sean, how would you recommend that people get this incredible book, Reform Yourself?
I would go straight to, like you said, shop.catholic.com and buy the book. It's also available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. But, you know, actually, while I'm on it, why not just visit your local Catholic bookstore and support them and see if they can get a copy if they don't already?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. So there are many different ways that you can get Reform Yourself. I really encourage you to do so, because I just, this will be another book I keep by my bed, John. So.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
You know how sometimes
I have to pull out my inner Saint Gonzaga. Did you you remember in the chapter whenever I said what the thing he hated most?
What was that?
He said when people praised him. Now, I don't have the humility of Saint Gonzaga, but that means a lot that you would say that, so thank you.
But you know what, Sean? All glory goes to God. I mean, we would be fools to think that we did everything we do on our own, for Pete's sake. You know, we can't put one foot
whenever
in front of the other.
Writing,
yes.
I'm sorry. Whenever
Go
I started
ahead.
Writing
yes.
for, you know, I guess I wouldn't say when I started writing online as a Catholic, one of my friends said something to me, and he said, you know what, don't worry about Sean. If 100 people read your post, or 1,000 people, or if just you, you know, get one view, and that's just you refreshing the page after your edit, you know, you're writing for Jesus. So, you know, like
Amen.
You said, this is Jesus's book, you know, yes. And I hope that it does something for the body of Christ is really all my hope is.
But you know what, Sean, what you just said is a profound truth, really. I mean, we have discussed this in my family so many times. I have 10 brothers and sisters, right? And they're wonderful, most of them. But, you know, there will come a time when one will say, you know, he doesn't appreciate a thing I do, or blah, blah, blah. You know, and he's like, you know what? You don't do it for him. Ultimately, you do it for God. That's all that matters, that we look at everything we do.
Right.
So, in other words, when someone doesn't, you know, recognize who we are or what we do or how we do it, who cares? We don't care. We just want God to recognize. And he surely does, doesn't he, Sean?
Yeah. And he doesn't praise us. We praise him.
Amen. And that's what it's all about. So, you know, I like when I encourage someone, you know, by saying how wonderful they are, they know that, you know, this, it all glory goes to God, you know, it's so true. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's a wonderful book. So, and he prompted you the whole way. It's so wonderful. But we're talking about St. Robert Bellarmine, and you spoke about how he had a very important habit of surrounding himself with other learned people. I mean, this makes sense. My mother always says, tell me who you go with, and I'll tell you who you are. But he also had something to say to parents, which this was all new to me, and I was so happy to see it. Do you have that part on page 88?
I do. I think I do. Yep.
Okay.
It's actually quote number 88, too, for the chapter.
Okay, great. Yes.
It shows you how many quotes are in this book, and if listeners
Tons.
Are interested in hearing from the saints, and not just from, you know, little Sean McAfee, who they've never heard of, you know, this book has over, I think, the total references in the back is somewhere like 250. So this book, it draws a lot of its content from the saints. But I'll go ahead and read that if you'd like me to.
Yeah, I would love for you to read it, because it's so great.
Yep. So he says, the generation of children, together with their proper education, must be had in view if we would make a good use of matrimony. Again, it is a most grievous sin for people to unite in matrimony and be blessed with children and then neglect them or their pious education, or to allow them to want to allow them to want the necessaries of life.
Yes.
That goes along with what the Church has been saying since Vatican II, and even really far before that, about the family and the importance of where education begins. Especially
yes.
spiritual education, you know, if we hope our kids are going to grow up and be Catholic or be successful really in the humanities at all, then we really must step up and walk the walk, you know, instead mm-hmm. of just talking the talk, you know what I mean?
Boy, it's so true. And I mean, you know, especially today, I mean, because of the world that we live in, and obviously it was the same in the Counter-Reformation, you know, of course they didn't have the resources that we have today, wouldn't you say? To train our kids, we have to train them in the ways of the Lord, and formation is so critical, because if you don't know why something is evil, And the converse, why it is good to do certain things. You know, they're being ripped off, these kids, if they don't understand these things. So, yeah, but I love then how, he talked about the best way to surround ourselves with a community of scholars. He even went into this, and you look at three of these solutions, how to have a community of scholars.
Yes, I'm trying to find that. I wish I had the
book. On 89, the first is a third order. You talked about the first is a third order, as you are a third order member.
Yep. These are a part of the religious orders. So really almost every major religious order that any listener has heard of, other than I think the Jesuits, but I don't think the Jesuits have a third order. They have an order. They call it the third order because it's associated with the lady. The first order is associated with priests and ordained. That includes deacons. Mm-hmm. The second is religious, like you said, with the Norbertines or the Servites or several of other, including Dominicans,
yes,
like my own and Franciscans and Carmelites. But also there is a third order, and these are rapidly growing in popularity, and they're a tremendous resource is the third order. And these are open to lay people. It's not a register online and get a card in the mail with your picture and name on it and, you know, log in here. This is something, these orders, the third order of, at least of mine for St. Dominic, it has, mm-hmm, I'm still not even a fully professed member, and I've been with it for 4 years.
Wow.
Going on. And
well, is that
so
because
there's
why? Why is that?
So there's an order. There's an order to the way you do things, just like there is for the first and second orders, and that is, I guess, it's a time of discernment. So the first is the initiate program,
yes.
At least for the order of St. Dominic, the third order, and that's about 6 months to a year where novitiate they contemplate, they learn about the order, they learn about the priorities and the pillars that belong to that order. Almost all of them have something very similar to that. And then you make I can't remember, it's called initiation, I think. And then you, you spend about a year or two kind of learning more actively and participating more actively. And then at the end of that 2 years, you make temporary promises. And that's the stage that I'm in. And then for the Order of St. Dominic, after that is a 4 year period of contemplation, where, you know, you're expected to, you know, I guess, live within the order independently, but also attend the meetings and participate, you know, with your chapter. And then at the end of, I think the total process is something like 6 years for a lay Dominican. At the end of that, if you're still copacetic, then you can enter the order.
Wow.
You can enter the order. So it's not something, like I said, you just, you know, log in and I want to be a lay Dominican and they'll send you a card in the mail. No, this is something very serious. But it's also, you know, with that seriousness and with that time comes a time of adjustment and a time of learning to where by the time you enter the order fully professed and promised, you're not just, you know, a member by name. You have transformed to become one of the followers of that particular order, you know, inside and out. So you're thinking like they do, you're practicing your faith like they do, and you're working in the vineyard like they do. It's very special. I encourage listeners to, you know, really consider that if they're really looking for the next thing, especially lay people, if they're really looking for what that next step might be to be more involved and become, you know, more conscious of what God wants to do in their lives, consider the third order. They're magnificent.
You know, I totally agree. And the Dominicans would probably be what I would choose, I think, because I love St. Catherine of Siena so much. She's another saint that I really can appreciate. I mean, you can appreciate all of them, of course, but you relate to some more so than others. But St. Robert Bellarmine talked about the second secret to success was to become a master apologist through becoming a teacher. And I started thinking about the news source, which was another one of his. Was this where you brought in the fact of to the internet, to look at the internet as well? But I thought of our Catholic news agency, and it's the only fast, reliable, and free Catholic news source that brings blogs, stories, opinions, and even more to your fingertips, the latest breaking news, too, sometimes. So it's at CatholicNewsAgency.com. I didn't want to forget to bring this in, John. It's an online service, of course, from EWTN. But back to the whole idea of becoming a teacher, I thought that was really good, because if you are going to, want to master something, you have to study. And then once you master it, you're not supposed to keep it all in, right? You're supposed to distribute your talent. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, it can work even more effectively in the reverse. You know, if you really want to learn, study. But if you really
yes.
want to master something, if you want to know how to communicate that as an expert, then you need to be able to become a teacher. And so as our modern model apologist, St. Robert Bellarmine, one of the clearest ways he did this was through teaching others. And he got started immediately upon entering and becoming ordained as he was used throughout Italy. I don't think he ever stayed anywhere more than 2 years until he retired in Rome. And what I mean by retired is they just said, okay, just write books, please. Just communicate
wow.
everything you know. But he stayed everywhere for about a year or two, and he would go, school to school. They even gave him a brand new chair. Not like something to sit in, but he became the chair of a brand new college in Rome called the School of Controversial Theology, where he was responsible for developing a curriculum and teaching priests what is going on in the Protestant denominations. What are they teaching? You know, how do we respond to these? And so through the repetition of communicating those things and having to figure out ways to teach the next generation about how to defend it, he became the master. And it's as simple as that. If you want to learn, go ahead and study. But if you want to be the master at something, teach.
Yes, and that is so true. And this can apply to us easily. I mean, look at all these good souls who find the time to teach catechism, right, for the parish. We used to call it CCD, mm-hmm. right? I don't think they call it CCD anymore. But, just catechetical formation. You learn it, you teach it,
right.
And I love teaching. The whole thing is, I just think you want to give what you have. You can't give what you don't have, so you want to be able to share what God and His joy and His happiness and everything that it involves having God in your life. I mean, how else can people be happy, Sean? I mean, you've got to, like I say, eternity's too long to be wrong. You got to get the picture. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, yeah. And there's really nothing more to say on it. Like you said, you know, the catechist teaching, CCD or once a year doing the RCIA. You know,
yes.
the people that are doing that, they're really the salt of the church to me. And they are the people who are holding together the continuity of really our whole faith. So anybody looking to become a better apologist in the style of St. Robert Bellarmine, go ahead and contact your parish leaders or your pastor and ask to start becoming formed to be able to teach RCIA. If you're not already equipped, if you already have the credentials, then great, present those. But we certainly need those who have the abilities and who have the zeal to, become teachers of the faith within the church.
But isn't the most important thing, too, before you can do any of this, is to, really become prayerful. And like you say, reform yourself. Get yourself in line, right, with the teachings of the church and understand them. St. Augustine said, to avoid evil because it is evil is good. But to avoid evil because you understand why it is evil is better. So
yeah.
this is, it's the understanding,
yeah.
and the Holy Spirit gives that to us, wouldn't you say?
Yep. I'm thinking of the wretchedness of my own heart as you're saying those things. So, yes, it's certainly, important for us all to contemplate. And as we develop, as those things, like as we take up the suggestions that you and I are bringing up, you know, not just having the head knowledge and being able to communicate it, but, you know, to use those things to develop a better appreciation and love for God.
Yes.
You know, we'll become even better at those things because we'll be, we'll be more convincing through our humility and our love. Like we were saying at the very beginning, you know, when you're preaching love, you're preaching effectively. And there's also something else that I shared in this chapter about humility. You know, St. Robert Bellarmine, he really knew it all. Really, he knew it all. You know, his first three,
he could honestly say that,
huh? The controversies. I mean, he just seemed to do it all. You know, he didn't just write, you know, 10 million words in the three volume book, The Controversies. You know, he helped Pope Gregory reform the calendar. You know, he helped write the first catechism that came out after the Council of Trent. You know, and the list of achievements goes on from there. But the only way that he was able to do all that effectively was through the humility that came with his prayer. And so I say in the book, I say the apologist will communicate nothing if he does not communicate humility. And I think that comes through prayer and, you know, being able to say, okay, you know, I'm effective, but I'm also, you know, effective for God. I'm not effective for me.
For myself.
And that should be the, you know, that should be our anthem as, you know, we try to learn to become reformers of ourselves.
Yeah, makes so much sense. I love this part where he said to obtain the zeal or apostolic wisdom, which is the very foundation of Christian preaching, nothing avails so much as assiduous prayer, constant and serious meditation, and the careful reading of spiritual books, especially such as contain the lives of the saints. Is that why you put this
in there? That was a plug for myself within the book that has already been bought.
Now there's some humility for you folks.
Yeah, multiplied. No, but he's right. He's right. You know, and going over to another saint who took that advice, you know, not from St. Robert Bellarmine, but he took that very same advice, even if it didn't come from reading the works of St. Robert Bellarmine, and that's Ignatius of Loyola.
You know,
whenever he went to battle. And he is probably the first of the counter-reformers, right? Whenever he was young, he was very zealous to die for his country and to serve and to, you know, be famous that way. Lo and behold, in one of his earliest battles, he gets his leg almost blown off. It's crushed under the falling wall of a castle under him. The French troops enter the castle, and they let him live, and he spends the next 6 to 9 months infirm on a bed with a possibly broken leg. He doesn't know if he'll ever walk again. And he's like, well, you know, much like St. Jane Frances de Chantal, he's like, what am I going to do with my life now? And most people of the time had a religious, let's say religious practice, but he probably didn't have religious zeal. So he participated with the sacraments, but it was probably lukewarm. And like we said, he had very worldly ambition, but he turned those through reading the saints and reading through the life of Christ.
There you go.
But especially through reading the saints, saying, man, that's heroism. This is courageous. Not, you know, I mean, it's very important. I mean, I work for the Army. I served 4 years in the military. It is very important and thrilling, you know, in so many ways to serve your country. But it is even so much more important to serve the army of God. And that's really where St. Ignatius of Loyola really comes from, is that kind of development that changed his life in order to change the world of the church.
Boy, it's so true. And I mean, he was really so amazing. And here was a wild and woolly guy. I mean, he was very far from God and the church at one time, wouldn't you say? I mean, he really had to reform himself, you know, quickly, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think his chapter, this was never discussed. The title of the book kind of came after several iterations of covers and title suggestions, but really it is at the heart of one of the quotes that's in the chapter for St. Ignatius of Loyola, who really, like I said, was probably the first real true counter-reformer. And he says, if you go about wanting to reform the world, first reform yourself or else all your labors will be in vain. So it says it all right there.
Yes. And what else I love that you put in here that he said as well, that the fundamental purpose, or these might be your words as well, fundamental purpose of spirituality is seeking holiness, okay? Allowing God to seize our hearts. And I just thought, yes, I mean, that is it, you know, that you have just your heart for God and for all of his beloved children. But how does this happen? How does St. Ignatius of Loyola talk about seizing our hearts, God seizing our hearts?
Mm-hmm. Well, it begins with asking, you know, some fundamental questions, I think, about, you know, things that he must have thought about on that bed while he couldn't move.
Yeah.
And while
yeah.
maybe he was given these books about the saints and the life of Christ. And, you know, who am I? Who are we? You know, we
yes.
are God's creations. We are his yeah. children through his son, Jesus Christ. What are we? We are human beings fashioned in the image of God and likeness, infused with a rational human love. And then
yeah.
why do we exist? And this is
yeah.
the really hard question. Everybody knows we're human. Everybody knows, you know, maybe who created us. But why? Why do we exist? This is a fundamental human question. And we get to it, but I think in order to get there, we have to recognize, you know, our God. You know,
yes.
And our
That's St. Catherine of Siena,
is
Sean. That's St. Catherine of Siena. Self-knowledge.
Exactly.
We can't possibly know mm-hmm. who we are until we know who God is, you know? So,
exactly.
And we're his
yep.
kids. See, there's that Dominican again. I just love her. And that's it. That is, just, that's so true. I'll tell you, I can't wait to meet these ladies and men in heaven, as I said earlier, because, it'll just be, oh my goodness. Because how much they blessed us, how God blessed us, we would say, through them, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, I think it'll be special. I often think about that too, Barb. You know, I mean, just the theological concept of going to heaven, the beatific vision.
Yes.
You know, receiving that, and he says, the Bible says, we will know as we are known. We won't really know exactly what that means, but we do know that the beatific vision, you know, we will share that with all of the saints. We will have different
yeah.
rewards in heaven, and based on the merits that we earn here on earth, that is a real teaching of the Catholic Church. But we will all share in that beatific vision. So not only will we get to meet these saints, you know, that
yeah,
we just
yeah.
love and appreciate, and
yes.
they will notice us immediately, right, outside space and time, because they have
sure.
been praying for us as we've asked for their intercession.
Amen.
They're not strangers. And we'll be able to share in this divine love and sweetness of the beatific vision together. That's really, you know, I think about that often. You know, we're not going to have to introduce ourselves, say, hey, I'm Sean McAfee, I wrote, you know, about you. It'll be instantaneous. It'll be, you know, like you said before earlier in the show, we really don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but we know it's certainly going to be special and intimate.
Yes, and if we just can model them, you know, that's the most important thing. How did they mortify themselves? How did they struggle with prayer at times? And what did they do when they struggled with prayer? And just so we can be always on the right track, you know, trying to see how things are going. I'll tell you, I just, Sean McAfee, I can't thank you enough for being with us today. Thank you enough, but our generous God can, and you know it. So I just want to say that, you know, I just want him to continue to shower you with his love and with his peace and his powerful graces, because you are a treasure of Mother Church. I mean, I thought you were training yourself to be an apologist. You are an apologist, but I mean like a professional one. So I was surprised when you said you have a... Tell us your business again, what you do.
Oh, I work for the Army. I'm a contracting officer.
Yes.
So, in the world of the government, there are people who, you know, have to buy things from paper to, you know, large systems, and I'm one of those. So I work every day to save the taxpayers' money and to make smart decisions with it. And and also help the families of soldiers and soldiers themselves get the job done the right way. It's a thrilling job. It's maybe not as exciting as writing a book, but I do enjoy it.
Well, listen, I am so grateful to God to meet you, and I'm so grateful to Catholic Answers for publishing this book, Reform Yourself. And I just want you to know that we will all keep you in mind, heart, and prayer, Sean. God bless you. God bless your wife, your three precious boys, and, you know, we'll hopefully talk to you again on The Good Fight. And I also want to thank my brilliant producer, Matt Kubinski, and to all of our listeners who listened to us today. And until next week, let us continue to fight the good fight and run the race until we run right into the arms of our merciful God. Bye for now.